Welcome back, everybody, to the Inside Lacrosse D2 D3 podcast. Our usual host, Matt Kinnear, was not available. So, surprise, it's me, Kyle Devitt, and Dan Kaplan, ready to take you through all the D2, D3 action for this week. Dan, how you feeling, man?
Feeling great. In high school, my friends and I had a saying for this. You know what it was?
What was it?
No parents.
No parents. Yeah, dad's
not
here.
No rules.
We might cross some lines, but that's part of the fun of this podcast in particular. But unfortunately, we're going to start with something that is not fun. Oglethorpe has announced that they will not be playing at Sewanee this weekend due to racial epithets being used against the visiting competitors of Emmanuel in Sewanee's game earlier this past weekend. They put out a statement directly onto Twitter, Oglethorpe did. Over the weekend, Sewanee students attending the men's lacrosse game used racial epithets toward visiting competitors from Emmanuel College. Out of support for our student athletes and Oglethorpe community, our program has elected to cancel this week's contest with Sewanee. We both know the head coach of Oglethorpe, Kyle Morris. What is your kind of read on this situation?
The first thing I thought of, you know, when they canceled this game, obviously you totally stand by them. First thing, you know, totally support that decision. Totally think that's a great thing that this university was so willing to back the school's, the team's decisions. And this happened on the women's side as well. And so, you know, it's something that they decided as a university. It's something they decided as a program in itself was important enough for them, you know, that they wanted to take that stand and make that stance. And after losing a whole season last year, you know, games are limited already. They're not going to, don't totally know what's going to happen. And they felt strongly enough that they're willing to let this opportunity to play a game pass in order to make their stance heard. And I think that that is absolutely something commendable.
Yeah, I think my first reaction was good for them. You know, it's about time someone takes a stand against this kind of stuff. And we know it's not necessarily a reflection of the Sewanee program, right? It's the other students in attendance of the game that did these things. So I think people that are just like anti-Sewanee lacrosse program are getting it wrong. I think it's more of an issue that you need to address within the school. It's not a lacrosse thing insofar as it's not the lacrosse team. It's people that attended the game. And in many ways, that's worse to me because it's everyone else on the campus that wasn't, you know, doing the right thing. You know, and I think one of the things that we don't talk about the pandemic too much on this podcast because, like, you hear about it way too much, right? One of the things that I think we all should have learned, and I've said this many times, is empathy and not having empathy for students that have sacrificed. Everyone that is playing now has sacrificed so much to play. They've sacrificed their time, their bodies, their effort, everything like that, more so than any other team or player has done ever before, especially at this level and every level across the college landscape. So I think when you get an opportunity to make this statement and you know that, you know, at the end of the day, you're taking a game away from these players and they're probably okay with it in terms of everything. But to go to that measure, I think it's commendable. So, you know, I commend Oglethorpe for taking this step, for putting out a statement and having no tolerance for racism as it relates to anything around their program.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said.
All right, let's move on. We'll do a short little recap from this past weekend. Saturday's game. I don't know if this is a big game, but we wanted to talk about something about it. And it was Clarkson 18, Nazareth 11. Dan, give me a rundown of the mythical fall of Nazareth.
Here's the thing. This isn't 100% Nazareth's fault that we're having this segment.
Fair.
It's everybody who texts me every single time they see Nazareth involved in a big game nowadays and goes, this is going to be awesome. And I have to be the bearer of bad news and be like, I don't know, man. It's just, it's been so long. I really believe it's been since like 2015 when they had Luke Wooters and they had these two really slick attackmen. I'm forgetting the other one's name. I apologize. But they were awesome and they were so slick and they were able to do so much. And then since then, it's like, man, we just haven't gotten that same Nazareth team. And I want them to come back. Because I want those people, when they text me, I want them to be like, yes, you're right. This is going to be awesome.
But, yeah. Man. No, I agree. I think the thing with these, and I'm not trying to generalize, but I will. These upstate New York teams with huge alumni and fan bases, right? They always get an overinflated expectation of their team. And in no season other than this one can that be more wrong. Yeah. Like, you just can't have that. That nothing is certain, but like the possibilities are there, right? But the certainty is just, it hasn't been there for so long. So I don't know, you know, I know there's like a ton of Naz alums. Like they have a whole team at Placid. Like, that's no joke. That's actually hard to do. And I see them every year and I'm just like, I got a Naz team? Like, still? That's amazing. Good for you.
At this point, it's like the dad's club should be more well known than the actual team for what they've put out the last couple of years, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think when we were talking about this off air last week after last week's pod, Dan was like, yeah, people talking about Naz. I'm like, no, they're not. You know, like, I can't remember the last time I was like excited for a Naz game. And again, it's not to disparage the program. I think a lot of what we're seeing across the landscape is expectations for programs, right? And you place them too high. The perfect example. Sorry to bring this up so early in the podcast. Salisbury.
Oh boy.
Salisbury acted. Salisbury fans acted like they didn't lose to Lynchburg, which is the funniest thing to me ever. Ever. And we'll get to it. We'll get this out. Don't worry. We'll talk about you. But I think that kind of reflection is like almost amplified for certain teams in Division III. And this just happens to be one of them. Let's move on to Sunday from last week. Cabrini 14, Montclair State 6. Cabrini came in consensus top 4, top 5 team across everyone's board. They're not killing teams like these other top 3 teams are, right? Is that worrisome to you, Dan?
On the first podcast, I came on and kind of said, no, relax. They just played down. It was their first game, you know, whatever it is. There's a couple things that stick out about this Montclair State game. Obviously, the final score, it wasn't really that close, you know, like 14-6. Eight goal game, right? So like in general, it's not that close, but it kind of felt like, and it didn't really feel like it was ever totally in reach either. And it was a bit chippy, a little bit weird. So, you know, you could make these excuses for Cabrini if you wanted to, but I don't want to. Like, I wanted to see Cabrini come out and have the best offense in the country and score 20 goals.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to see those things, especially going into Friday night. And what we saw, we didn't quite see that. You know, they were crisp and good 6-on-6, and, you know, they shoot the ball well, and they're going to get theirs. They were 1 of 11 man up, which with their firepower on offense, that probably shouldn't happen. And going into Friday night, we're going to get there to a little bit of a preview later with their bout at Salisbury. But they're going to need to play up, right? It's not like they're going to be able to go in and do what they've done so far this season in their first two games and then walk out of there with a win. I think they're going to get stomped if that's what happens. But as we've seen, you know, they get a little bit hot, they get a little streaky, and then you blink and they've scored 6 goals, you know? And so hopefully that happens. Hopefully they play up going into Friday night, but based on Sunday and their previous go with Southern Virginia, I'm not sure that's what we're going to see.
I will say that the one thing you said that you led off with was you expect Cabrini to drop 20 on Montclair State. And they didn't.
Yeah.
Like, I expected that. And I'm not, like, following Cabrini as closely as you or Kinnear are, because I'm occupied with the absolute dumpster fire that is all these New England conferences, like not starting until like next week, and me being like, can you talk to me about your team? I'm so scared. Like, are we going to be good? Like, you know, that kind of thing. So one other notable result from Sunday, Illinois Wesleyan 16, Rhodes 14. And yes, I am an Illinois Wesleyan stan. You know this. I love their style. It drives me crazy. And my coach brain short circuits when I watch them. But them beating Rhodes, I think, is significant. And Rhodes is having a little bit of a tough go. They haven't won a game yet. But Illinois Wesleyan beating Rhodes is kind of a little shift down there that I appreciate. Did you catch any of this game? Do you have any opinions on this kind of Southern matchup here? Southern Midwestern matchup, excuse me.
I don't necessarily have anything super profound about this one. I know Illinois Wesleyan is your team. They play that wonky style and, you know, they ride like crazy and all that type of stuff.
Yeah. Love it.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting. Obviously, every time that they're able to pull out a win, playing that style and against a team where that's traditionally been the opposite. So that's something to obviously watch for and is cool for their program and a good milestone.
I just love watching a team that does not care about giving up an empty net goal on a 10-man ride.
Yeah.
Because they know they're going to get the ball back and score on you. Like, that is the whole mentality of that team. It's like a Terminator. They just keep coming at you. I love that mentality. The way they do it drives me insane. And it would drive you insane too if you watched a lot of the games. We actually, Kinnear and I, try to get Dan to watch Illinois Wesleyan games. I think he just doesn't want to, because I know that his fundamental coach brain will melt down inside of his skull.
I need to be able to sleep at nights.
Yeah, I don't think you need the nightmares that would bring to you. Let's look forward to games that will have already been played by the time you listen to this podcast, but have not been played at the time we're recording it. The marquee matchup of the midweek slate is absolutely St. John Fisher versus RIT. And given what RIT did in their opener, where I think even the guy that carries water for them scored, I'm not sure. I think they put him in and he got a goal. St. John Fisher has a real opportunity here to play against, I think, one of the top three teams in the country against RIT. And if they pulled off an upset, I mean, this could be like the thing we're talking about for the next 5 days. Do you think that's a possibility, Dan Kaplan?
Absolutely.
Wow. Really?
Do I think that there's a chance? Yes. I don't know. Wouldn't say that it is the most likely outcome, but St. John Fisher already has a couple games under their belt, so they've got a little bit of chemistry. I assume that means that they've been practicing a little bit longer, so a little bit more chemistry. And then NAS scored 8 goals on RIT.
Oh, wow.
And some of those goals, there were some pretty serious breakdowns. And so I may be, you know, jumping to some conclusions. It's obviously hard for defenses to start their season gelled.
Yes.
But I do think that St. John's Fisher is going to score some goals in this game.
Yeah, I think the one place they need to beat RIT to have a chance is the middle of the field. And I think that could be tough for them. I know RIT is not as powerful as they have been in the last, like, I would say 2 to 3 years, with that whole like amazing crop of long sticks like Trevor Smith, like patrolling that area. But I think that there's a way to disrupt them. And if you win, you know, if you win faceoffs and your goalie makes stops, you stack your stops up, you've got a good chance. I'm going to go with, I think RIT is going to take it though. It's a short bus ride. It's almost a home game. So I really like RIT's chances. And, you know, I think they need to keep building momentum and keep having dominant performances to kind of stay in the national conversation. And I actually think they'll do that.
Right. Yeah. One thing that I think really helps with RIT is if you have any familiarity with them, you know, just being able to already understand, okay, going into this game, we have to get our O mids a little bit of reps on D mids. We have to get them some reps matching feet and doing all the things that they need to do in the sub games. We need to get our close defense a little bit, some reps, making sure that we're comfortable rotating if they do get a step on those sub games and all those types of things. Mm-hmm. So there's a few things that when you have familiarity, just being up in the North and having played them year after year and seeing them all the time, that it gives you the ability to prepare for them a little bit better. So I think St. John's Fisher is going to give them a better game than a lot of people may be thinking. I do think RIT still wins the game, but I think it's going to be closer than people are giving St. John's Fisher credit for.
Yeah, and that's what I mean by RIT dominating the middle of the field and having to have someone challenge that, because nobody plays sub games like them. Nobody runs transition like them. And if you can kind of disrupt that, you have a chance. And the best example of that, unfortunately for RIT fans, sorry to bring this up, is when Wesleyan kind of matched them punch for punch for the entire game in that NCAA playoff in 2018. Yeah. It's a tough order to make, but if you get it right, you know, you can get a huge victory. Let's take a quick kind of speed round look through the rest of the contest midweek. York Widener, I know you have thoughts on this. You kind of reverse jinxed here. I'm gonna call you out on it. I think you did a little reverse jinx here when we were kind of planning this. What's your reasoning behind thinking that Widener is kind of gonna come in and maybe disrupt York?
Well, here's the thing with Widener, and I hate when this is the makeup of teams, but they have a bunch of seniors that are tough. A bunch of tough seniors makes a team dangerous right off the bat.
Any level, by the way.
Yeah.
Any level.
Yeah. And so they have a bunch of tough seniors. They have a bunch of good shooters. They're pretty dynamic on offense. They have an attackman, Connor Heisman, who is, you know, very polished. He's really similar to a kid that gets a ton of praise on here, Dylan Rice at CNU. They are very similar games, and he's really polished. They almost beat Gettysburg right at the end of the year. They gave them a really good run, and then right towards the end of the game, Gettysburg kind of woke up, went on a run, and scored some goals. But that was a really tight contest. And so, again, I think that Widener coming in, they haven't had any games. They have no scout. There's nothing available on them, where York has had two games. So you have a little bit of intel on them. And the two games that York has played weren't exactly tight contests, you know. So it's York's first real contest, you know, whereas it's Widener's opening game. So there's going to be some funky things. It'll be one that's interesting to watch. You know, I think that York is the better team. I think they're more talented. I think they end up winning, but I think Widener is tough and feisty and going to give them a run that we haven't seen them have yet this season.
The other game we want to talk about, Law and Order SVU versus Washington Lee. It's just straight up acronyms across the board. My dislike for the turnover machine that is Washington Lee is well known and documented. What is your take on this matchup? And we've talked about Southern Virginia a couple times before, but do you kind of see this going differently for them after, you know, what happened last week?
Well, I hope Washington and Lee isn't sleeping the way that Cabrini did, because I think Southern Virginia could catch them. Southern Virginia might be the most battle-tested team in the country right now. Their stretch of teams that they've played this season is unbelievable. They've played like all top 10 teams, and this now is like with WNL is their first like top 20 team, so they're trending downward with still ranked opponents, you know. It's crazy. And so they're going to come into this game, they're going to have their, you know, offense clicking, they're going to have their guys that really make noise and make you have to get down and defend and do a lot of things well. And if WNL doesn't come in prepared, there's a chance Southern Virginia comes out of this one with a victory.
Just need to cut it down on the turnovers, man. I'll go to your side. Just can't have bad turnovers.
WNL has had one under their belt. They played Mary Washington, and they crushed them early in the year. So there's a chance this all just gets shoved back in my face. But I got love for Southern Virginia.
Absolutely. CNU, Randolph-Macon. My only question here is, how good is CNU and how good can they be?
I think this is a good barometer. I think Randolph-Macon makes for a good barometer. They're coming off a really strong season last year. I think they have one game under their belt with St. Mary's, so they've got a little bit of time to create some chemistry. CNU is a team, though, that, you know, I've come on here a couple times and said that they can be as good as any team in the country. It's just a matter of cleaning up a few things, and that includes facing off. And so any opportunity you have to see them go against a good scrappy team like Randolph-Macon is a good opportunity to see where they are with that. And you know, like I said, I think Randolph-Macon is a good team, like good barometer team for you to see, you know, exactly where some of these best teams in the country are. I don't see Randolph-Macon beating them, but I do see them beating them up a little bit. You know, they're strong, athletic, tough team. And so we'll see how far that goes and could give CNU a little bit of a test.
Let's move to Friday night. Friday Night Lights. Salisbury, Cabrini. Salisbury in angry mode, dropping 30 last week. Cabrini, as we talked about before, sort of making up ground after winning their first two games in an, I would say, not over-convincing style. What is your read on this one, and how close can it be versus how much of a blowout could it be if it goes wrong for both teams?
I totally think that Salisbury dropping 30 last week was a message, by the way. They did it to Southern Virginia, who
yes.
Cabrini beat by two. That was a message.
Yeah, get ready.
Yeah. I don't totally think that, like I said before, I don't totally think we can base a whole bunch of Cabrini and where they are as a team based on that game. But I do 100% know that Cabrini's going to have to play up and play better than they've been playing so far this season, right? And yeah, you're right. Salisbury is in angry mode, right? They're come out and have just absolutely beat the bag out of the last couple teams they played, with Mary Wash last night as well. And man, like, they've just been tough. They've been all over every ground ball. They've done a few things differently. They've played some different guys. They've made some adjustments since the Lynchburg game, just like we knew they were going to do. They've been bringing Melton through the box a little bit. They still haven't had Borkowitz back, but they've been playing a freshman LSM, which let them put a short stick in Woodard's hand. So they've made some adjustments since that game, just like we knew they would. And, you know, they're pissed off. So Cabrini's going to have to come in, play up, and play better than they've played all season.
Have you watched The Last Dance at all? The last, like, Bulls season thing that went up on ESPN?
Yeah. Okay.
One of the things I was surprised not to see is in that season where they broke the record, right, for wins, the regular season, they went 72-10. One of the games they lost was to one of the worst Celtics teams I can remember in the history of living up here in New England. That game, I'm not saying it's totally analogous to the Lynchburg loss, but if you kind of see where I'm going here, the loss to Lynchburg might have galvanized this Salisbury team in a way that we don't even understand yet.
Yeah.
And that could play out as soon as Friday night against Cabrini. So if I was Cabrini, I would make sure to bring extra arm pads and my big boy pants to the game. Because otherwise, like, this team is angry and ready to take you on and take you down in, like, that kind of killer mentality that we all know Salisbury is famous for, right? The intensity. I think they lost to Lynchburg because Lynchburg had more intensity to them. I'm comfortable saying that. You can come after me, call me a Salisbury hater all you want. They lost because Lynchburg not only matched their intensity, they exceeded it. And that is probably something that they are not pleased about, and something that has been remedied since, is my guess. And they do have the full complement of players. They were missing a couple. I'm not making excuses for them at all, but I think full complement Salisbury, everyone healthy, everyone on the same page, is legitimately frightening for teams to play in any circumstance, home, away, neutral, wherever. So I think this game could be one of those fulcrum games that shifts an entire season for both teams. So I would definitely not miss the Friday night matchup of Salisbury Cabrini. Anything else to add before we move on to Saturday?
No, I think I'm going. So follow me if you want some pictures or something. I don't know.
Are they going to let you in?
I don't know. I'm just going to go to the gate and start banging. If they don't, though, I guess.
Yeah, it's a tough thing. I've missed
Matt Kinnear's in charge here. He's probably getting media passes or something.
Yeah. I think, like, one of the things that we've had to adjust to as people that cover games is, like, now we're just, like, defaulting to have to watch them on tape, which I'm comfortable with. I love watching tape, and I know you do too. But it is different when you get to see teams play in person. So, yeah, I think that's kind of been not taken away from us, but it's been a limited option this season for obvious reasons. I'm not complaining. I just it's a different way to look at games and cover them. But let's go to the Saturday slate. St. Lawrence, perennially in the top 20, their season debut against St. John Fisher, which is probably like the battle of some river that I don't know the name of. And I'm saying, I'm sure there's like some sort of a story history of this game. I don't know what it is. I just know that like they're fairly close. So it's probably going to be messy. Do you have a take on how this one is going to go?
I think it's hard to predict before the RIT game, but I really like St. John's Fisher, as you can tell by my prediction that they're going to score some goals and give RIT a bit of a run for their money. So I would expect them to win that game. St. Lawrence, there's a couple guys that, you know, we're going to have to see if they've replaced and where they are, specifically in the goal. Terry for them was spectacular. So we're going to have to see what they've done to replace him and fill those shoes. But yeah, another big upstate matchup for you.
Got to love that upstate. I was going to do an accent there, but I know Kinnear's going to edit it out anyway, so I'm not going to do it. Let's go. Roanoke, Washington, and Lee. Again, these are like anything below a certain Mendoza line is definitely your territory. This is one of them. What's your take here?
The big thing here is just the ODAC implications, right? It's the three-headed monster down there with Roanoke, WNL, and Lynchburg. So I would expect WNL to win. Roanoke's kind of on a similar NAS trajectory. Like, I don't want to go down a whole rabbit hole, but they've been down the last few years. And so I would expect WNL to win this game, but we'll have to see. You know, it's one of those games where you can kind of throw the record books out. You can throw what you know out when these two teams get together. So always interesting to watch as a Southerner for ODAC play with Roanoke WNL.
Allow me to provide some locker room material. Roanoke can't shoot. Haven't been able to shoot for years. I just figure it out.
Always good goalie play. Coach Pilot knows how to recruit those guys.
Of course. Oh, it goes without saying. But if you're shooting like 20% on the regular, how are we talking about you? I don't know. But this could be the game they need to kind of maybe get back into the conversation. The huge matchup for Saturday. The thing we've been working up to. CNU Lynchburg, a titanic matchup. Lynchburg scoring goals from all over the place. And CNU, like you mentioned before, stepping up to battle their biggest opponent yet. I think if CNU can win this game, it shakes up the entire top 20 in a way that like is seismic. I'm not saying they will, but if they can, what does that do to everything?
Totally. I have Lynchburg as high as you could imagine them going.
We are for them being three today.
Yeah.
I'll put it out there to everybody. We'll pull back the curtain. They were not ranked three, and Dan and I were like, no, Lynchburg three.
Yeah, I had them at one. People think I'm crazy right now. I had them at one. They're the only team that, I mean, they beat number one, right? They have the best win of anybody in the country.
Yep.
And they've played five games now, and they've beat a team that took another top five team by 10. You know, they beat Southern Virginia by 10, who took Cabrini to a two-goal game, right? And so they've had some good wins. They're the only team that's played. They have the best resume of anybody in the country. So I had them all the way up as high as one, knowing that you guys were going to say, no, they're three and Tufts and RIT are above, but that's okay.
Northern bias. Yay.
Eye test comes into play somewhere. I do think that those teams are probably better, but RIT needs to figure some things out on defense.
I think it's all about like, yeah, it's like depth, right? I think one of the things that we saw from Lynchburg against Salisbury was they did dig a little bit to get some goals from different places. And that's really not what I expected from them. So that's the thing for me, them beating Salisbury, the most surprising thing to me was they were willing to run guys out that just made hustle plays. And those were the plays, especially at the end of the game, that got them that win. So again, I'm not disparaging Lynchburg at all. I really want to see what Christopher Newport can do here. I really do. I think like they're a very interesting team insofar as like we all know that they can score, they have great leadership, and they're perennially top 15. You know, eventually teams can't just stay in that spot. They go down or they go up. You know, we've seen teams, you know, stay in that kind of teen area, 15 to 20. And like, no one's scared of 15 to 20 in D3, right? I mean, that's just my read on that. If you're top 10 in D3, it hits different than if you're top 10 in D1. That's like the beauty of it for me. I think the way that we rank teams too is nationally, it is tough to see all of these teams play. But because of their regionality, which I'm not sure is a word, but we'll roll with it, you're able to see really good teams play really good teams all the time, especially in conferences like you mentioned, like the ODAC. So, you know, I think this one has potential. I mean, I know Salisbury Cabrini is kind of the filet mignon here, but this could be some nice creamy mashed potatoes to go along with that for this weekend.
Yeah, definitely. I think the biggest thing for this game, I see it shaking out similar to that Maryland Rutgers game that just happened. I don't know. I hope everybody watched that to have understand this reference. But essentially, it's back and forth for 3/4 of the game, and then Maryland kind of pulls away. And I see that happening similar here, where Lynchburg kind of and Lynchburg and CNU go back and forth, and ultimately CNU is asked to play too much defense.
Yeah, yeah.
And it ends up wearing on them, and they end up scoring some goals. They go on a run towards the fourth quarter. That's how I see it playing out. I don't see them being able to narrow the gap at the face-off.
Yeah, I was going to say face-off is definitely the other thing that we should talk about.
Right, yeah, it's a huge factor in this. I see Lynchburg, you know, owning the X. And if that's going to be the case, then CNU is going to have to find some ways to, you know, alleviate that, whether that's through saves or creating some turnovers. And as we saw with Salisbury Lynchburg, I don't think that CNU is necessarily going to be able to go and force them into turnovers if Salisbury wasn't able to. So it'll be interesting to see if they're able to overcome that gap there.
Transition's huge. Transition, as we've seen, I think in a couple games so far this season, has decided a lot of games. The ability to execute the ability to make stops in transition is really, in my opinion, what swung a lot of that Lynchburg-Salisbury game. So, you know, I think if Lynchburg can kind of keep doing that and have the chaser be the guy that somehow stops ball, which happened on two fast breaks in particular in that Salisbury game, that's dangerous, man. That's a different level of athleticism and preparation. So, you know, again, I think the games to watch for sure are Salisbury Cabrini on Friday and then CNU Lynchburg on Saturday. Definitely look forward to catching those. Make sure to come back next week to get our takes on those games. Let us know. Review the podcast wherever you get this podcast. And Dan, where can people find you on Twitter?
At dkaplan46.
So make sure you hit him up. If he can't get into the Salisbury game, maybe just walk over and let him in if you're kind of working it. And you can follow me at @thekyledevitt on Twitter and Instagram. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.